here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality was usually scoffed at. Illusion was usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, this afternoon, our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're going to be talking about Able Danger. Which was a secret government unit, that was researching, terrorism and Islamic terrorism, both in Europe and the United States before 9/11. And I think now it's four or five members of this secret team have come forward and said, we knew all about Mohammed Atta. We were tracking Mohammed Atta, and we were tracking a number of the terrorists, and we had pictures of the terrorists. But you know the most amazing thing? Somehow the Army's lost all those records, and they say, well, we can't verify this. Oh, yes, these people all say that, but where are the records? And, well, of course, they gave them to the 911 Commission, and the 911 Commission decided they wouldn't want to use that because it would just confuse the scam job they were going to do on the American people. I mean, it would just confuse the American people to because we couldn't actually prove that we didn't have the government documents. At least we couldn't find the government documents, or maybe they'd been destroyed, that showed that a government agency was tracking Mohammed Atta before the 9/11 attack. And as Dr. Cuddy has pointed out in his book, the cover-up, which we do still have copies of, the children in the Pakistani of New York City took their cameras to school on September 11th, 2001, so they could take pictures of the attack. But our FBI, that had spent hundreds of millions of dollars in their counter-terrorist system and program, had no idea an attack was coming, or they were sure it was coming overseas, even though the April 6th presidential daily briefing had talked about Osama bin Laden plans to attack the United States. But they thought he was lying. They thought he was really saying that just so he could attack overseas. Or are we been lied to, Dr. Cuddy? Why don't you pick up the story?
Well, it sort of looks that way, because you have to believe a whole lot of coincidence. A lot of people say, are you a conspiracy theorist? And I would say, well, it's a choice between being a conspiracy theorist and a coincidence theorist. And a lot of times it's far more difficult to believe that all of these things are coincidental. For example, in terms of Mohammed Atta, who flew into Newark Airport when he came here in the year 2000, in June the 3rd, even before that, before June the 3rd of 2000, and I'll get to some dates in a minute, because the chronology of this thing is important in piecing the puzzle together. You had in April of 2000 a fellow named Niaz Khan, as you mentioned to me in the past, K-H-A-N, who flies into Newark Airport and proceeds to get, he's got some gambling debts. Al-Qaeda has helped pay off some debts he has over in London, but he gets trained in Lahore, L-A-H-O-R-E, Pakistan, by Al-Qaeda, comes over here, has second thoughts, runs out of money, gambles away as well, walks into the FBI office in Newark and passes two polygraph tests, when he tells them that he's been trained at this base in Pakistan by Al-Qaeda and has come here to hijack U.S. Airliners.
And, of course, this was in April of the year 2000. Right. This is over a year beforehand. And he walks in and he says, I'm a hijacker. I'm part of a team, and we're going to hijack your planes and crash them into your buildings.
Well, actually, the second part isn't clear. He actually said, I've been trained by Al-Qaeda in Lahore to come here and hijack airliners. And as far as he knew, what he was going to do was hijack them and fly them elsewhere rather than crash them into buildings. Now, whether he was lying or whatever, or all maybe right. the plot sort of changed. But the point
right.
is...
We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're going to be talking a little bit about something called Abel Danger. Now, the question is, did the government know there was going to be an attack on 9/11? Is it possible that they knew the attack was coming and they did not try to stop it? Well, we know that the president on the 6th of August, and anybody would like to see the presidential decision briefing, was told Osama bin Laden, that's the title, plans to strike in the United States. Osama bin Laden plans to strike in the United States. So they knew he was planning to strike here. They knew that they were looking at buildings in New York City. They knew that they were planning to hijack planes. These were all in the presidential decision briefing. And then, of course, what did the president do? I mean, did they put marshals on the planes? Did they, you know, mobilize the National Guard to protect the planes and protect the airlines? They didn't do anything. They didn't tell anybody the attack was coming. And that morning, certainly, there were no special procedures. In fact, when the people in the South Tower wanted to leave the South Tower, they were ordered by the Port Authority to stay there, not to leave, and save their lives. So pick up the story, Dennis.
They also, as you know, disarmed the pilots, too,
right.
Not long before that.
About 2 months before, they put a directive out that now no pilot could carry a weapon. Why would they do that, knowing the attack was coming?
And that's important. A lot of people say, well, they didn't have the specifics. Okay, let's assume they didn't know they were going to fly into the World Trade Center building in Pentagon, never mind the fact that Project Bojinka said they would do exactly that. But even if... My problem is, even if you accept what the administration says, at the very least they knew, like this Niaz Khan and other information, that hijackings could occur, and then they did those specific things that you just went through that seemed to almost invite it, disarming the pilots and so on. And so what I tried to do was, through a series of Freedom of Information requests, find out who did what when. And that's why this chronology is important. And I was actually just talking to a fellow who broke the story on this Abel Danger. The first people who broke this, really a small paper, it's called the Times Herald, is the name of it. It's up in New Jersey. And the fellow who is writing the article, and he's talked to the first Abel Danger person named Schaefer, who came forward from Kurt Weldon, put him in touch with him. The fellow's name is Keith Fucas, P-H-U-C-A-S. And he's a very interesting fellow. He's interested in all these subjects and digging into it and getting this type of information. So I was going through some of this stuff with him and telling him about the German intelligence magazine.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, of course, who's taught at the university level, who's actually was in the Department of Education, working in the Department of Education for the Reagan administration. But Dr. Cuddy is mentioning that the story on Abel Danger, and that, of course, is the story about this secret government unit that was actually monitoring Mohammed Atta and other members of the terror cells before 9/11. And the story had been broken by somebody at a newspaper up in New Jersey, and Dr. Cuddy had recently talked to him. So you tell the story from there on.
His name's Keith Fucas, that's P-H-U-C-A-S. He's a staff writer who Kurt Weldon, who's the sort of driving force member of Congress, the House of Representatives, he's chairman of the Armed Services Committee as well as the Homeland Security Committee, has been pushing this. And hearings will actually come about in the Senate Judiciary Committee in about a week. They were supposed to start today, but because of the Hurricane Katrina, the hearings on John Roberts for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court were delayed a week, and so Abel Danger under Arlen Specter is pushed back a week as well. It'll be next Wednesday. And so far, there have been two people initially, one named Schaefer and one and Navy captain named Philpott. Philpott's the one who ran the 11-member Abel Danger team. It's a classified project. It's an Army project, but it's multidisciplinary. It's General Schoomaker, who's now Army Chief of Staff, began it several years ago, back in September of 99, actually. And he's a curious fellow himself. Schoomaker is the one who was a brigadier general at the time that Waco occurred, the Branch Davidian assault on that compound, and he was the Wesley Clark was head of Fort Hood, Texas, Wesley Clark, the Rhodes Scholar, friend of Bill Clinton, presidential candidate, NATO commander in chief, military commander of NATO for a while. Before that was at Fort Hood. And he had two brigadier generals under him. One of them was this Schoomaker fellow, and Schoomaker's the one that went over to Ann Richards, governor of Texas at the time, after the failed BATF raid on the Branch Davidians, and was telling Ann Richards what weaponry, materials, military equipment could be used. And then, of course, he followed up with the FBI on that. It's not that he was, you know, actually pushing it. He was just, you know, here's the material available. But anyway, after that, the next thing I knew, he popped up, I think, over in East Asia somewhere at some luncheon saying we ought to have joint military exercises with the communist Chinese. So he's a curious fellow. After that, George Bush, of course, just had to have this fellow as his army chief of staff. So anyway, he sets up in 1999 Able Danger in September. Now, prior to that, German intelligence had been on to Al-Qaeda for a while, and our government was warned by several other governments that something big was in the works and going to happen, and so there were ample opportunity to follow up on this stuff, and I think actually we probably did, although now we don't want to sort of let on what we knew when. So that's why this chronology is important. In November of 98, Mohammed Atta gets an apartment in Hamburg, Germany, and he gathers together several others who are part of an Al-Qaeda cell there. A few months later, February 17th of 99, Germans intelligence starts tapping the phone of somebody named Zammar, Z-A-M-M-A-R, and what happens is they hear that this fellow Zammar is about to have this meeting with Mohammed Atta. So they're aware of him and this fellow Zammar's connection. Not long after that, a few months after that, Able Danger, as I said, began in September of 99, looking for, using advanced analysis methods and data mining activities, to follow Al-Qaeda all over the world, not just in the U.S., but to track Al-Qaeda, because they're perceived as a growing threat. And in December of 99, a few months after Able Danger begins, the CIA starts to recruit a fellow named Darkan Zonli. He's a businessman over in Germany, and he knows, this Darkan Zonli knows Atta. So the CIA is getting interested now because he has knowledge of this Al-Qaeda cell. The very next month after December 99, January through May, the CIA is surveilling Atta, Mohammed Atta. That's the same time, January, February, that Able Danger identifies Atta as a member of this Al-Qaeda cell. And my guess is, although there's been some criticism of the FBI not being informed by the CIA, I would suspect the CIA surely communicates with agencies like the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and the DIA is run out of the Pentagon, and of course Able Danger was a Pentagon activity. So it makes sense. Maybe even one of the 11 people on Able Danger's group was a DIA member.
Well, you know, the thing is, we're told that the CIA couldn't talk to the FBI and the FBI couldn't talk to the CIA, but I've talked to a top FBI agent who told me he talked to the CIA regularly. And you wonder, was there really this barrier there, or did they just contrive that as part of the idea, oh, we're just such bungling idiots, why, we don't know what the right hand is doing, the left hand doesn't know the right hand doesn't know the left hand, we're so incompetent, that's why this happened. And I really don't believe that they weren't talking back and forth. I think that's what they want us to believe. It's all a matter of what we believe, it's not whether it's true or not.
Yeah, that's probably right. In fact, I have an upcoming series, a two-parter, and it will be in newswithviews.com, showing how it's almost like a good cop, bad cop routine in a number of areas, not just 9/11, that on the one hand, they want you to think they're a bunch of bumbling dummies, whether it's the Katrina response or 9/11 or Saddam's guerrilla warfare strategy when we attacked Iraq. But on the other hand, the power elite has this very intricate plan way in advance in lots of areas to achieve this world government. So it's like they want you to think we're stupid so that you won't suspect that they're really not this incompetence.
We remember when they used to have Laurel and Hardy, and of course, Laurel was a pretty good, but I forgot which one was the dumb one, but I remember Abbott and Costello, and Abbott was just so foolish. He just couldn't think clearly at all. It was all a game, but it sure was entertaining.
That's right. That's exactly right. They were that way, and like you said, Laurel and Hardy as well. They would be like a foil. They would operate against, and then deliberately mislead. And of course, in this case, it's perfect. You wouldn't suspect it at all. Then later on, there were like humorous routines along the same line. Do you remember the Pink Panther and
right?
What's the name? Peter Sellers.
Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah, Inspector Clouseau, and he was a bumbling person. But then his chief of police, who actually developed like a tic, he was getting so upset. He started laughing one day though, and he said, "Yeah, but what if Clouseau is right?" And sure enough, Clouseau always used to bumble into, the solution to the problem by accident or whatever. But anyway, back to the Abel Tainter. What I'm saying is, even if you accept, which of course we have good reason not to accept, but even if you accept what they say, that there was a problem or a failure in communication between the FBI and CIA, there's no failure of communication between the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA. And the Defense Intelligence Agency is a Pentagon outfit, and they were probably involved with Abel Tainter. So it's, in my opinion, it's like I said, do you believe in coincidence theory? Do you believe it's really a coincidence that Abel Tainter identifies Atta in January, February of 2000 as a member of the Al-Qaeda cell at the very same time, January on through May, that the CIA starts surveilling Mohammed Atta? And so, anyway, so during that same period, April is when Niaz Khan, who I've mentioned, comes to Newark and tells the FBI, Al-Qaeda is being trained, here I am, I'm supposed to hijack airliners. And the next thing you know, towards the end of the surveillance period, but during it, in May 18th of 2000, the embassy, American embassy in Berlin, grants Mohammed Atta a visa to come to the U.S. Now, the German intelligence magazine's name is Focus, and September 24th of 2001 is when they wrote a fairly long piece, and in usual diplomatic language, not, making a flat-out accusation, the way the German intelligence people responded to this magazine was, they said, well, we cannot exclude the possibility that the Berlin embassy granted this visa to Mohammed Atta, even though he's being surveilled by the CIA, which has learned and followed him from Hamburg to Frankfurt, where he's purchased materials that can be used as explosives. We can only, we cannot exclude the possibility that the reason they're granting this visa is because they want to watch this guy once he does enter the U.S. And, they're almost like saying, we're saying that's what happened. They just phrase it differently. And so the next month, a few weeks later, June 3rd, Mohammed Atta arrives in Newark. And the very next month, July, he starts flight training at a Florida school, Huffman Aviation, learning how to fly 747s and 57s and so forth, aviation training. And just a couple of months after that, September of 2000, what happens is Atta is identified by this Abel Tainter as not only part of Al-Qaeda, but a Brooklyn cell. Now, that makes perfect sense to me, because if Rahman, the blind sheikh, who has been the driving force behind the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, is in charge of the Al-Farouq Mosque there, surely when Mohammed Atta shows up, they'll identify him too.
Okay.
I hear the music.
Are you hearing the music? We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And the thing is, we know, for instance, in Omar Rahman, the man who's behind the first bombing of the World Trade Center, got out of prison over in Egypt with the help of the CIA. That's covered in a book called The Unholy Wars, written in 1999. And then the CIA gets this known terrorist into the United States, where he begins plotting on how they're going to blow up the World Trade Center, and leads to the bombing in 1993. Gee, those guys in the CIA aren't very smart, Or maybe they're a lot smarter than we think they are.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol, 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting the attention of the smart money investor. And that's with no small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about, well, we're talking about the fact that intelligence agencies were monitoring Muhammad Atta. And you have to understand, we got about 10 intelligence agencies. You got your Army intelligence, you got your Navy intelligence, you got your Air Force intelligence, you got your Coast Guard intelligence, you got your DIA, you got your NSA, you got your FBI, your CIA, and a myriad of others. But we never talk about what all those ones were doing. Oh, no, the FBI just had no idea. And if they didn't have any idea, nobody had any idea. And that is all to mislead the American people. So pick up this story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Right. Just before the break, you were saying sort of tongue-in-cheek, you were saying these guys in the CIA are not very smart, or maybe they're smarter than we think they are. That brought to mind that quote we've both seen from the end of the preface of Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, where he says, Baer says, a reporter, a friend of mine, just told me that he had talked to one of the highest level CIA officials there is, who told him that when the dust finally settles from 9/11, the American people will see 9/11 was a triumph of intelligence agencies, not a failure.
How could the death of 3,000 Americans be a triumph for our intelligence agencies, unless, of course, this was for a greater good, like getting us into a war in Iraq?
Well, that would be one conclusion one might reach, because as soon as this happened, and everybody says, well, you know, it's quickly identified all of these people and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and, well, where is he? Well, he's Afghanistan. While everybody in general was saying that, people like Don Rumsfeld, who had been members of this specific group, Project for the New American Century, he, within a few hours, sent out word, see if we can tie this to Saddam. So he wasn't just looking at Osama in Afghanistan. He was looking right off the bat as to how they could pin this somehow on Saddam, which would give them their pretext for invading Iraq. Because back in 1998, among other times, this group, Project for the New American Century, had said, what we really need is to get rid of Saddam, and they said Saddam was just the immediate justification for what was a larger strategy, and the strategy was how could we have a permanent military presence in that Gulf region to protect our allies, such as Saudi Arabia, Israel, Kuwait, and so forth, as well as protect oil supplies. And, of course, Afghanistan was important, because you would have to get, in fact, they actually had there was a particular Far Eastern publication which had this little map. And the little map had, well, now here's the route that the Russians and the U.S. would take troops when they invade Afghanistan. This was before 9/11. And basically we were threatening the Taliban with doing what we wanted them to, or else we would attack. And one of the main reasons was people for UNICAL and others, big oil conglomerates, did not feel that the Taliban offered the right deal to get that pipeline from the Caspian oil region down through Afghanistan so it could go into Pakistan, India, and so forth. And so this group, Project for the New American Century, was saying these things and writing letters to Bill Clinton, later George Bush, about how we had to remove Saddam, but it was part of this greater strategy. So, same thing for this other group, which people pay relatively little attention to, but in my opinion, it's just as important as PNAC, and that was the James Baker Institute at Rice University, in cooperation with the CFR, issued reports both before 9/11 and before the invasion of Iraq, saying basically the same thing. Kenneth Lay was on that, head of Enron, and saying, you know, we need this oil, and here's how we can do this, that, and the other. And so this was planned out well in advance. And I remember also, now that I think about it, in Robert Baer's book, where he's saying, I think the term this woman who was an ambassador over there was pimping for Exxon at the time. And it seemed like these considerations were driving our foreign policy. The desires of people like Khalil Zad, who's now the ambassador over there and the envoy to Iraq, and now the ambassador to Iraq. He was a UNICAL consultant at the time. So these people are very, very thick, and the plan goes way before 9/11.
And in fact, for our listeners, if you'd like to get Robert Baer's book, we still have it. He was a CIA agent for 25 years. The book is called See No Evil by Robert Baer. We carry the book, and you'll actually read what the highest-ranking CIA official said about what a wonderful triumph 9/1 was. But we can't let the American people know that, or they wouldn't understand. He doesn't say that, but that's the inference. The American people realize it's really a triumph. Also, you can read, of course, Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty, where he will tell you that in January and February of 2001, many months before the attack, they were already planning on how we were going to attack Iraq.
fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, pick up the story there. This incredible revelation now, suddenly we find the intelligence, at least one of the intelligence agencies, was tracking Muhammad Atta before 911, and the 911 commission just left that out of the report, and the administration concealed this information. Why, if there's nothing to conceal, if they didn't know ahead of time, why would they conceal this information? And of course, the thing is, they cannot let the American people know the truth, especially as the casualty count continues to rise over in Iraq, both American boys and, of course, Iraqi, innocent Iraqi citizens. Pick up the story there.
Okay, well, we were in the summer of 2000, Muhammad Atta had gone to this, in July of 2000, this flight school in Florida, and that's the same time that, July of 2000, that presidential candidate at the time, George W. Bush, was having his photo, he and Laura, with the family of Sammy Al-Aryan in Tampa, Florida, who was teaching at a Florida university at the time.
And wasn't he financing the terrorists?
He had been on an investigation for some time. So it wasn't like, you know, George, we find out later what he was doing. He was already being looked at beforehand for what he was doing. He was collecting money for one of the groups was called Islamic Jihad, and that had one of its centers for activity in North Carolina. And the reason I'm bringing that up is there's a particular connection to this whole scenario at this time. George Bush, during his speech, looks out in the audience and sees Sammy Al-Aryan's son named Abdullah, who had attended Duke University in North Carolina. And he specifically refers to him by his nickname, "Oh, there's Big Dude," as he calls him. You know, sort of a promo of this young fellow, make him feel important. Well, Al Arian headed the group that he headed was something. Well, he headed several things. One of them was the World Islamic Studies Enterprise, and according to the Wall Street Journal, that group, quote, brought terrorists into the U.S. and raised funds for Islamic Jihad, end quote. Now, as I said, one of the locations for the Islamic Jihad was in North Carolina, and at NC State University, which is in Raleigh, North Carolina, that's where Sami Al Arian received his computer engineering master's and his doctoral degree back in the 80s at that time. Now, why is that relevant? Well, at the same time, what you had is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who would be the mastermind behind the attack eventually, which would be September 11th, attended a small college, same time, early 1980s, in Murfreesboro, North Carolina. That's up in the northeastern part of the state. And then he transferred in the summer of 1984 to North Carolina A&T, which is in Greensboro. And the reason that's important is that institution was known to have a group of radical Islamists known as the Mullahs. And in 86, 2 years later, 86, Mohammed graduates, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, with an engineering degree. And my feeling is that probably helped him in the planning and organizing of the 9/11 attacks, which Mohammed Atta would be the ringleader of.
But, of course, wasn't Khalid Sheikh Mohammed also involved in the first World Trade Center bombing? Wasn't he somehow working in the shadows behind his nephew, Ramzi
right.
Yosef?
Absolutely. Ramzi Yosef and a fellow named Abdul Hakim Murad, and the whole escapade over there in Cebu City in the Philippines, where Terry Nichols of the Oklahoma City bombing thing just happened to be at the same time. And when I say just happened to be, that's tongue-in-cheek as well, because prior to Terry Nichols going over there, neither him nor Timothy McVeigh could blow up a tin can. But when they came back, they seemed extremely proficient in making these bombs, which Ramzi Yosef just happened to be an expert in doing.
And, of course, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed happened to be in the Philippines at the same time, and all the evidence suggests that he was meeting with Terry Nichols right along with his nephew, Ramzi Yosef.
Right, and the nicknamed the Farmer. That's what they called Terry Nichols at the time. He made several trips over there, and then, of course, everybody knows the story of Oklahoma City. So there's also this connection as well to Oklahoma City bombing, as well as the 1993 first World Trade Center bombing, as well as the 9/11 attacks.
But I think what's so important for people to understand is there was a great deal of evidence that there were members of the Iraqi Republican Guard who were John Doe 2, 3, 4, the others unknown in the original Timothy McVeigh indictment. Why would the administration suppress that information? That would be great. That would somehow justify going to war with Saddam Hussein. Why would the successive Republican and Democratic administrations suppress the fact that there were Islamic involvement in the bombing of the World Trade Center?
Well, one possible explanation is that after the first Gulf War back in 91, the plan at that time under George Herbert Walker Bush was to have a number of these. I think the first group was like 3,000, another group of 5,000, totaling roughly 8,000 Republican Guard Iraqi soldiers were brought to this country, many of them around the Oklahoma City area. But even though the plan was okayed by the State Department under George H.W. Bush, it was actually carried out in 93-94 under President Clinton.
Oh, that's why Clinton and Bush are one Democrat, one Republican, one pro-life, one pro-choice. Why are they such good buddies today? And we see them on the television all the time together. Maybe there's not a dime's worth of difference between them.
They show up after the tsunami hits over in the Far East, and now they're together again with Katrina. So yeah, they get along just fine. One skull and bones, the other part of Cecil Rhodes' plan to take the government of the whole world.
Well, they were both counsel on foreign relations, though, and certainly George Herbert Walker Bush was a member of the Bilderbergers. Of course, they brought Bill Clinton over to the Bilderbergers. They tapped him to become the president of the United States, and there in what was in 1992. And so it all, I mean, you know, these people give incest a bad name.
Yeah, they do. And George Herbert Walker Bush used to stay with the Bin Laden family when he went over to Saudi Arabia. So there's multiple connections here. And so anyway, back in 2000, that was what was happening. So now we're into 2001, and Mohammed Atta is getting his apartment in Hollywood, Florida. He's settling in there, not just, you know, taking trips to the Huffman Aviation for flight training down there. But now he's got his apartment in Hollywood, Florida, and that's in May of 2001. And a couple of, about 3 months later in August, is when he receives $100,000, which is wired to him at the request of the head of Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, named General Mahmoud Ahmad. And this is very interesting because the very next month, before 9/11, September 3 through 5 of 2001, the former roommates of Mohammed Atta, who are still in Hamburg, take off and go to Pakistan. But while they're en route to Pakistan, coming in the opposite direction is the same general, Mahmoud Ahmad, who arrives on September 4th in the United States. He stays for the week before 9/11 and the week after 9/11, and he's having talks with top Pentagon officials as well in Washington, D.C., as well as top CIA officials and National Security Council officials at this very time, among whom, well, in addition to, especially after 9/11, is Richard Armitage. And if any of your listeners want to look at newswithviews.com, I have recent articles about the fourth anniversary of 9/11 as well as Able Danger. And then there's another one they can see that would give them some insight into Richard Armitage and the ISI, very close to them. He got a Pakistani award from these people. And so here we have the week prior to 9/11, General Ahmad here talking to top Pentagon and other officials, which in turn makes extremely relevant the fact that on September 10th of 2001, some top Pentagon officials, according to Newsweek magazine, suddenly cancel their travel plans for the next morning, the morning of 9/11, not the afternoon, not the later in the week, but the morning of 9/11, apparently because of security concerns. And the same day, at night, late at night, around 10 o'clock, September 10th, Mayor Willie Brown gets a telephone call from security people warning him and all Americans in this warning to watch their air travel because something's up. And so I thought, well, you know, let's not assume too much here. Let's assume that there's just one of these general FAA warnings, because Mayor Brown says I've gotten warnings in the past. So I filed a Freedom of Information request with the FAA and asked them first, did they issue any warnings, alerts, emergency rulings between May and September 15th of 2001, and they wrote back and said, well, yes, we issued 12 of them of about 35 pages, but we're not going to let you see them, apparently, you know, because of national security, whatever.
They didn't want Osama bin Laden to know what they knew.
That's right. Don't want to let Osama bin Laden know, because he's busy over in some cave dragging around his dialysis machine while directing these, you know, masterful projects all over the place. So anyway, I wrote back and said, okay, well, if you can't tell me, you know, let me see the 35 pages of warnings, how about this? You've already told me that you had 12 warnings between May and September 15th. Nail it down a bit. Were any of them between September 2 and September 11th? And I thought they'd say, yeah, we had, you know, two or three, something like that. And that would be maybe what Mayor Brown got. But they said, no, we didn't issue any warnings, alerts, or emergency rulings for the whole first part of September, which is extremely important, because that means these warnings that the top Pentagon officials got and Mayor Brown could not have been from general FAA warnings coming across somebody's desk.
But we had actually, I just counted them, we have 14 intelligence agencies, and some of them obviously knew what was happening. Some of them were informing the people in the Pentagon. Somebody was informing Mayor Willie Brown. But nobody in government seems to be interested in finding out who informed the Pentagon officials or Merrilee Brown, and certainly the 9/11 Commission didn't touch on that.
No, they didn't. And just a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, on August 26th, I heard a tape on a network, a Sinclair Broadcasting Network called News Central, and they were playing a tape of Representative Curt Weldon, whom I mentioned before, and he said, quote, "There are people in the Pentagon who have manipulated this process, who have in fact destroyed information, and who in fact have tried to keep this from coming forward," end quote.
In fact, Curt Weldon has told us exactly where Osama bin Laden is. Our government knows where he is. He's living in a village over there in Iran. He has to have good medical support because he's a very ill man. We know exactly where Osama bin Laden is. They just don't want the American people to know that they know where he is, and they never have any intention, of course, of doing anything to a member of the bin Laden family, because, of course, he has very hot ties with the key people here in this government.
That's right. And that's one reason Clinton, for example, when they were asking him for permission to hit that training camp where bin Laden was with cruise missiles, they decided not to because some prince was there, from Saudi Arabia or wherever. And so I suspect they have a very, very good idea of where he is. In fact, one of the CIA operatives over, and I think it was Dohar, actually walked into a hospital where bin Laden was getting treatment, had a nice little chat with him up on the second floor.
And that was in July of 2001 or something.
That's right, it was Dubai, right. And D-U-B-A-I, the Emirates. And he walked in there. Now, this isn't, you know, just some casual visit. To Bill Clinton had already issued orders, secret orders at the time, back in the 90s, that we could actually kill any members of bin Laden. If we identified a plane that was an Al-Qaeda plane or people on him, he had drafted these secret presidential directives saying, you have my permission to kill these people. So here's this CIA guy walking in nonchalantly into this hospital where Osama is, the head of Al-Qaeda, up on the second floor, I think it was, getting some treatment. And so there's this very, very cozy relationship, and one does have to remember that some years ago, bin Laden was a CIA asset, having some of his people trained here to go to the Mujahideen against the Soviets, just like Saddam Hussein in the late 50s was a CIA-trained assassination, part of a six-man squad to assassinate for the CIA, and they protected him afterwards after the botched first attempt that happened. And so there is this very cozy relationship. In fact, all of our covert operations in that part of the world of the CIA go through Pakistani intelligence, the ISI. And in that article I mentioned earlier where I talk about Richard Armitage, I put some of those connections, you know, names of generals and where they are and what they're doing and who knows what way. In fact, Richard Pearl, everybody thinks he got killed for one reason, but the real story, in my understanding, is that's what he was looking for. He was actually looking for the connection between the CIA and Pakistani intelligence and what was going on over there. That's why he wound up suddenly captured and executed over there. And so the bottom line, since time is getting near, is, as I said, on the one hand, we're supposed to be a bumbling CIA and FBI and not knowing anything and not able to prevent hijackings, even though Al-Qaeda fellow walks into your office and says, "Hi, here I am to hijack your planes. I've been trained by Al-Qaeda over in Pakistan." But on the other hand, there's this master plan that they're supposed to be too stupid to execute, which is going forward, eventually, ultimately, resulting in a world socialist government, in my opinion. And I put some of that information in a book of mine you're carrying called Road to Socialism and the New World Order.
All right, and we do carry that. In fact, we carry several of Dr. Cuddy's books. And if you don't have them, you really need to get them because they'll give you tremendous insight into what's really going on behind the scenes today. Well, we've got about 2 minutes before I have to let you go. So.
Well, what I would do is encourage your listeners. We've just had the fourth anniversary of 9/11. As I said, Able Danger hearings begin next week, the 21st. I would encourage your listeners not just to listen to radio programs, but to try and stimulate some interest. Call your members of Congress. Call other talk shows. Call your local talk show that maybe is on in the morning, afternoon, and inform them of what we have talked about, Dr. Stan and I have talked about tonight, And don't say, you know, something like, you dummies, don't you understand what the CIA or whoever's doing? Put it in the form of questions. Say, look, I've heard that, you know, and refer to them, Muhammad Atta. Refer to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in what we've said. Refer to the quote by Robert Baer in his book about See No Evil. Use those quotes and ask them, shouldn't we pursue this? Shouldn't we ask these fundamental questions of who knew what and when? Shouldn't we find out what happened to this Pakistani general who wired the $100,000 to Muhammad Atta? Isn't anybody interested in this? You know, ask questions like that. Ask questions as to who these top Pentagon officials were on September 10th who suddenly canceled their travel plans. If you put it in the form of a question, you'll find that a lot of these local talk show people will be much more receptive than if you, you know, start calling them names and saying, you dummies, why don't you do this thing?
All right, we're out of time, Dennis. I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here with us. God bless you, and you know, go to newswithviews.com and pull down Dr. Cuddy's information. You'll be amazed at the information he has. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carr's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carr's book, Inroad to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
Concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Store invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dennis Cuddy. I'm always amazed at how well organized he is, and he has the documentation for everything he says. I know because I very often will call him and say, Dennis, I want you to show me where that is. Now, the question comes up, did the hijacker who went into the Newark FBI office in April of 2000 say that they were going to hijack planes and crash them into buildings, or just hijack planes? Eleanor Hill's testimony before the Joint Intelligence Committee did not mention crashing the planes into buildings. However, if you get the report, it's called The Terror Timeline by Paul Thompson, and my interviews with Paul Thompson, why the other information did, and of course they simply withheld the information from Eleanor Hill. They lied to the investigating committees of Congress. Why would they do something like that? Well, maybe they didn't want the public to know the truth. If you'd like to get a copy of the book, The Terror Timeline, we have it. If you'd like to get Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, where he talks about contacting having one of his friends, one of the highest-ranking people in the CIA, who said, well, when the smoke settles, people will find this wasn't a failure, this was a triumph for intelligence. All those people dying. He didn't say that, but 9/11 was a triumph. Well, you have to understand, nobody wants to investigate that because that means they knew ahead of time and they let those people there to die. And if they did that, why, of course, no man's life or property or family are safe. The book entitled See No Evil, written by Robert Baer. Check the facts and find out if we're telling you the truth. We suggest you get the three books that we put together, the little pamphlets, each one with 50 or 60 pages. They're my newsletters, and they're called Foreknowledge 911, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. They're $3.95 each, or you can get all three of them for $9.95. Cheap, inexpensive, but of course well documented. And if you want the documentation on anything we say, we keep all of this documentation on hand so we can answer your questions. If you don't believe we financed Saddam Hussein, in the 1980s and right up until 1990, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the copy of the article from the Washington Post, When an ally becomes an enemy, we financed Saddam Hussein. In fact, if you read Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, he will tell you that on several occasions, the Iraqi generals wanted to overthrow the wicked man, this wicked man, and we kept him in power. In fact, as Robert Baer says in that book, every Iraqi he met believed that the United States was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. Read the book. Understand the implications of it. Understand that everything is on a timetable, and we're moving towards World War III, with terrible consequences for this country. That's why we're rattling the sabers with Syria. That's why we're rattling the sabers with Iran. And when you rattle sabers, why, you never know what's going to happen. So get informed and help us educate the American people. Radio Liberty is one of the few voices out here that will tell you that there are spiritual forces behind the scenes. There really is another dimension, and there are people, beings from another dimension, who are manipulating things today. And that's what the conspiracy is about. It's a spiritual conspiracy, and it is energized by demonic beings. We read about it in the Bible, but you have to carry it over into what's going on. You need to get my newsletters, The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1 and Part 2. They're available on the Internet at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send it to you for nothing. Or, of course, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull them down. That's RadioLiberty.com, the May or June newsletters. Remember, we're having our all-day seminar here in the Central Coast of California, November 19th. Call and make a reservation. Remember, we carry the Berkey products. If you'd like a big Berkey or a Berkey Light, you can get them from us. And if you do, why, you'll get a free four-tape set or video that we produced. Our number, 1-800-544-8927.